Hello,
Parce que
Peter.
let me share my screen. Can everyone see that?
Great.
And in full screen?
Yeah, that's much better. Thank you.
Great. So good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for the organizers for the opportunity to speak today. A few talks ago, Benno very eloquently outlined some of the thoughts that have gone into the sustainability efforts for other linear collider schemes that are far more advanced than what I'm going to talk about today, such as the ILC CLIC. And what I am going to talk about today is a new concept that's only really been around for the last couple of years, which implements plasma accelerator technology in the hope that it can make a linear collider smaller, cheaper, but also potentially greener. And that's hopefully what I'm going to focus on today and convince you that this could be the case. Okay, so a brief bit of background on particle physics and how plasmas could fit in. So we really are at a critical time for particle physics. We need to plan for the post-LHC era. FCCEE will be fantastic. I'm sure that that will be the outcome of the ESPPU process that everyone's very excited about, but it is extremely expensive. Linear colliders such as ILC and CLIC promise a reduced cost, at least for some part of the physics space, but they're still very expensive. And the key cost driver in linear colliders is the accelerating gradient, which is limited to something like 100 megavolts per meter, often operating much lower than this. However, plasma acceleration promises much higher gradients, so something like potentially three orders of magnitude higher, but at least one order of magnitude higher. But when you're thinking about just the gradient, this sounds absolutely brilliant. You could reduce the cost of the facility by a factor of 1,000 as well. But that's actually not the only cost driver. And importantly, as I'll explain, it's maybe not even the most important one. So you have to consider what other cost drivers define the design choices of plasma accelerators. And I should point out that HAARF is not new in terms of its idea. There have been several plasma-based collider designs proposed for the last 30 years. And here's an example of one here on the bottom right. Typically, they represent the state of the field at the time. So they're useful for identifying the remaining challenges, for focusing down where the field needs to go. For example, where we are conceptually and where we need to be experimentally. So plasma accelerators is a developing technology. It's certainly not ready for applications of particle physics, certainly not high energy physics. But we're not far away. A lot of important results have come out in the last decade or so. We are maturing towards real-life applications. For example, strong field QED. Some experiments were performed in 2018, which showed that you can actually perform this strong field QED experiments by colliding a laser beam with an accelerated electron beam, which is accelerated in a laser wavelength accelerator. But also free electron lasing, which has a lot of the same problems and challenges as a collider, but just on a smaller scale. So if we can demonstrate free electron lasing, then it really is a motivator for the field. And these are some results that came out only a couple of years ago, most published in Nature. And there are six key aspects of research that are relevant to colliders. And they're all tied up loosely in the equation for luminosity. So we need high energy transfer efficiency, high repetition rate and average power. We need to preserve the high beam quality for the interaction point for focusing, and also need to stage to very high energy. And the whole thing needs to be very stable. But there's also one outstanding challenge in our field, which is highlighted here in red, which I'll talk about in a bit, positron acceleration. But what I wanted to just briefly touch on first was energy transfer efficiency, because it has some relevance to sustainability. So energy transfer efficiency in plasma accelerators can, in principle, be extremely high. It can be something like 80% from main beam to accelerating beam. And this is due to the fact that we can heavily beam load the electric fields in a plasma accelerator. And we can get away with this, whereas you can't really in more traditional radio frequency cavities, because the quality factor of these plasma wakes is effectively one. We perturb this plasma, we generate a single accelerated cavity, and then it very quickly damps. So we have to do all our acceleration in this one cavity. But that means that we can essentially do whatever we want to this cavity. We can perturb it in whatever we want. And we can see here that you can heavily beam load this and flatten out the electric fields. And this means that you can get uniform acceleration across the entire bunch. And because of this, we can get something like a factor of four increase in energy transfer efficiency over competitive schemes such as CLIC. And there has been a lot of research in this direction in the last few years. So, for example, if you break this down, you have to transfer energy from the drive beam to the weight field, and then from the weight field to the witness beam, the accelerating beam. And proof of principle results have shown that you can get 60% from the driving beam to the wake, and then you can extract 40% of that energy from the wake to the accelerating beam. And that gives a 20% beam-to-beam transfer, which is comparable with the number that I mentioned from CLIC, but is still some far way away from the 80% that's theoretically possible. So there is more progress to be made in this area. As I mentioned earlier, for all the benefits such as energy transfer efficiency and the progress therein, positron acceleration lags significantly behind. We're something like maybe a decade or two behind the progress that's been made for electron acceleration in plasma. And the main challenge here is that electron motion, which is essentially equivalent to ion motion for the positrons, but plasma electrons are much lighter. I should point out that there have been some experimental results in positrons. So, for example, this is a result that was published in Nature about a decade ago, and they used the positron beam to drive a wake field and also accelerate parts of that positron beam towards the tail. So it has been experimentally demonstrated, but even if it were optimized very rapidly over the next few years, there would still be an issue, which is the luminosity per power is orders of magnitude below radio frequency and electron positron acceleration. So, if we were to build a collider in this regard, we'd have a problem, which is positron acceleration in plasma. So, we had a pragmatic idea, which was to accelerate the electrons to very high energy in plasma, but then use radio frequency technology to accelerate positrons. But if you did this and you had it as an even center of mass, so symmetric energies, then the footprint would be dwarfed by the RF for the positrons. So the idea was, can we make it asymmetric? And essentially, if we go up in energy, let's just say arbitrarily 4 times higher in electron energy and 4 times lower in positrons, then you can make this whole thing more compact, but you make it less energy efficient. So to improve the energy efficiency, you have less charge at high energy in the electrons and more charge in the positron bunch. And then it turns out if you can make the emittances different, so asymmetric due to the beta functions being therefore different at the interaction point, you can then improve tolerances for plasma accelerators. And this is how we've essentially progressed from what is effectively the ILC towards HARF. So we want to design HARF, but we want to do it properly and rigorously. And this sent us back to the drawing board. How do we actually improve a particle collider? And I mentioned it earlier, it goes just beyond the accelerating gradient. So you have to optimize for the power source, the accelerator, the energy uses, and also importantly, put a carbon tax on all of this. And you need to optimize this whole thing for cost. And I won't go into too much detail. This is just really for posterity. But essentially, you can start looking at things like the optimizing the beam power from the source to the beam itself. But you have to then also consider what the best type of driver technology is. To reduce the cost per power delivered from that source. So once you factor in all these different things, you have the benefits of plasma, but also the potential downsides of plasma. So you have to find a balance between how this could all look in an op cost optimization scheme. And this is effectively what we did. We put together a detailed physics and cost model. So we put lots of inputs that we could get from more advanced designs, such as the ILC and CLIC. And then we optimized all of this with Bayesian-based machine learning. And this is essentially the footprint that is spat out. So you can see here we have this driver linac, which is then being combined, the bunches, and then sent into this plasma accelerator linac, which then takes the bunches from something like 4 GeV up to 380 GeV. And then we use some of those beams to generate the positron target. These positrons are then sent all the way around here, put into a damping ring, put through a cool copper linac, and then sent together into this beam delivery system to this interaction point here to produce 250 GeV center of mass. And it starts looking very similar in some regards to existing design. So for example, you end up with something like a click light drive beam. And that makes sense because the plasma is essentially just a transformer. It's transforming low energy, high current beams into high energy, low current beams. And importantly, we have a plasma LINAC here, which has 48 stages and 10 megawatts of heating. So these are outstanding challenges. I'll touch on these a little bit later. And we chose semi-conservative energy transfer efficiencies. So 40% beam to beam, so a factor of two higher than what's been shown experimentally, but still a factor of two below the theoretical value. And if you're interested in more details, then this can be found in the submission that we put forward for the ESPPU process recently. So importantly, this has a length of 5 kilometers and a cost of something like $3.4 billion in 2024 money. The emissions here are given in terms of construction and run costs. And the wall plug power is approximately 106 megawatts. And this is all assuming a 10-year period of operation producing an integrated luminosity to inverse atom bombs. But importantly, if you can compare these numbers to other collider designs, such as IRC and CLIC, you can see here that the length is approximately 25% of the IRC. The cost is something similar, and the emissions from construction are a percentage that's similar. And the same goes for CLIC. It's something like 50% the length and cost and emissions of CLIC. So something that's interesting that's come out of this is that the emissions, the carbon emissions from construction, approximately scale with the length and the cost. And this makes sense given recent studies that have shown that a lot of the CO2 that's produced during the build is the concrete, for example, that's required for the tunnels. And the wall plug power here, I should say, is very similar to IRC and CLIC, but this doesn't take account for the fact that we could potentially push the energy transfer efficiency even further in the future. Okay, so I won't touch too much on this slide. This is really just to highlight what the two major outstanding challenges are between where we are now and building HAARP. And they are essentially staging of plasma sources. We need to get to very high energy. We need 48 of these plasma stages for HAARP. And the current state of the art is two stages. And that's only in a proof of principle way. And if we are going to go to very high luminosity, then we need a very high rep rate. And that requires much more average power in these plasma sources than we've ever had before, orders of magnitude, in fact. So we're going to need something that can handle multi-KV plasma temperatures. And that's just from a single bunch. This could be hundreds of KV temperatures across a full bunch train, which is approximately the temperature of the sun. And we need to cool these. So we need much higher cooling rates than what are designed for CLIC. But because we have this tangible design, it means that we can consider new optimizations, especially for sustainability. And one idea that we really just had only a week ago or so, sketched out on the back of an envelope, which I'll just very briefly talk about now, is can we essentially use this high temperature to do something? Can it give something back for us, which couldn't be possible, for example, with a superconducting RF LINAC because it's cold? So if you take the HAARP example, you've got 23 megawatts of power going into this drive LINAC, and only about 10 megawatts make it to the accelerating beam. And then of all of that energy, essentially 20 megawatts is lost in the RF. So you could potentially put a water cooling loop in amongst all of this, heat the cool water from cool to lukewarm with the RF LINAC. Then part of the energy in these drive beams is lost in the dumps. You could then take that lukewarm and make it warm, and then you could put it through the extremely hot plasma cells. So on the previous slide, I showed a scheme for a cryo-cooled plasma source. This may be what's required. But if we could get away with water, then you could cool with water and then take what's lost in the plasma and turn it into very hot steam. And if you just do back of the envelope calculations, assuming the costs for the ventilation and cooling that we've scaled from CLIC, and also very rough estimates of how much it would cost to operate a steam turbine, how much they would be efficient, you get a very rough idea of how you could go through this scheme. And I won't go through the numbers, I'll leave them on the slides online so you can take a look at them in more detail. But Potentially, you can generate something or save something like 5 to 15 megawatts of power. This saves something like 10 to 40 megawatts up front in these ventilation and cooling costs. And that then saves you something like $5 to $15 million per year in the electricity bill. And this is just for half. If you want to go to a 10 TeV collider, which is one of the goals in the US, you could be looking at 100 million per year. And this is only possible with hot technology. So to conclude, plasma has the potential to increase sustainability for HEPA in many ways. The obvious ways are the build cost and the operation cost. And HAARF represents the most tangible design in this regard. But the tangibility means that we can start thinking about real-world problems and producing real-world solutions, such as, for example, using the plasma heating to return some energy back to the system. And we're likely only scratching the surface of sustainability benefits of plasma accelerators. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Richard, for the very interesting talk. And we are ready for any questions. Dwayne, please.
Thank you, Richard. This is actually a fantastic talk. The slide where you had the changes from IRC to HAARF, this one, this is a very nice one. Can you explain to me again why you want to go for the asymmetric energies to charges to emittances? Like, what does that do in terms of sustainability?
So from the point of sustainability, it doesn't do too much. So it doesn't necessarily save you in power, for example. So one of the problems of going from in energy, from symmetric to asymmetric energy, is that you actually then make this whole thing less energy efficient. And we could have just left it at that. We could have just said, right, we'll leave it as it is, same charges, different energies, and we'll just take a hit in the power. But then really, the asymmetric charge was to deal with that from a sustainability point of view. We didn't want to come in saying that we don't care about how much this thing is going to produce, like in terms of CO2. So I guess the answer is really that we've considered this and we've tried to just make it as stable as possible with regards to IRC. So sustainability-wise, it works out similar in terms of how this thing all runs, but really it's much cheaper and lower in the carbon tax to build this thing.
Thank you for your answer.
And there is one more question from Chandra Muli.
Hi, I might have missed it, but what's the current status of the project?
So we are developing a pre-CDR. So we published a 10-page submission to the ESPPU. That's online. There's a link in the slides to archive. And we've made progress essentially in individual elements of R&D for this project, essentially subsystems, but they've kind of operated in a siloed way so far. We've put together this, which is Bayesian optimized, but it takes a lot of leaps of faith. So the next step over the next year is to take what we've done for the ESPPU and turn it into a cradle-to-grave simulation, which covers the entire concept. And then publish that in a pre-CDR. And then from there, a CDR and a TDR over the next 3 to 5 years.
It. Well, I hope that sort of answers the question. Thanks a lot, Richard. This was a very interesting talk.
Thank you.
And I think we can move on to the last one of the day, if I'm not wrong. Hopefully, I'm not wrong.